You are Locked On MLB, your daily podcast on Major League Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On MLB. This is your host, Tommy Stokey, and it's been a while. I think it's been about 2 weeks since we recorded, and for that, I apologize. Been busy with the new site that I'm working with. Bet Chicago is going to launch this week. You'll be able to find my work there. Chicago coverage, national sports coverage, and there will be some gambling focus there. But that launches, so I'm excited for that. Also, out of town. I live in Arizona, but I am home in my hometown in Illinois for my annual summer trip, and so it's just been kind of awkward timing with that. Awkward timing with the new site launching, and so then this had to take a little bit of a backseat. But we're back, and we're going to get into a regular rotation here again. The rest of the network has been doing a really good job. Still want to expand there, so that is certainly a focus moving forward. But today, I've got three segments. I want to look at power rankings, because it is Monday, and back in the day when we used to do this all the time, Monday was our day for power rankings, and our power rankings aren't the 10 best teams, because that's just impossible to do all the time, and everybody hates them. But a look at who had the best week in baseball. So I think there's a clear number one to me at who had the best week in baseball last week, and then a couple other teams to take a look at. So we'll go there. Segment number two, I sent out a poll today on Twitter asking which team in first place today has the best chance of winning their division, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Seattle Mariners, the Atlanta Braves. So I look at that argument for each to decide which one, if any, will it be. They all have their pros and cons, and they all have some competition behind them. So that'll be a big story moving forward, especially at the trade deadline for those three, because I think they're all in kind of different situations in terms of the trade deadline. And then I want to end with a segment on Paul Goldschmidt and something I heard a couple weeks ago as to what could be a reason why he's been in a season-long slump. And so I want to get into that and share what I heard on that matter. So we'll start power rankings. We will then go to those three division contenders. And we will end with Paul Goldschmidt and his slump. Power rankings. Let's look at who had the best week in baseball last week. And I want to start with, and this isn't, I didn't number these 10 through 1. I think there's one clearly at the top, and we'll get to that. But before we get there, let's just look at some of the other teams that had a good week. Starting in the American League with the Detroit Tigers, went 5-2, took 3 out of 4 against the Angels, and then take 2 out of 3 against the Blue Jays. They're playing well. They're playing, they're supposed to be at the bottom of the American League, and thanks to the American League Central being as bad as it is, and that means the Cleveland Indians only being, I believe it's 30-28, that nobody's really running away from it. So the Tigers are under 500, but somehow they're like two games back in the division. So we'll see what happens there. I think everybody knows or expects the Indians to pull away and the Twins to eventually rise and compete there, but Detroit, better than expected so far, and a good 5-2 week there. The Yankees had two games rained out, but went 4-1, taking two of the games against Baltimore, and then 2 out of 3 against the Astros. The Red Sox went 2-2 against the Astros, and then swept the Blue Jays, so a 4-2 week for them. They're up there for the week. And then looking at the National League, we had the Diamondbacks 5-1. I've said before that the perfect medicine for a slump is to play the Marlins and the Reds, and that's exactly what happened there. So taking care of business, winning 5 out of 6 this week against those teams. The Los Angeles Dodgers, 5-2, sweep the Rockies, split against the Phillies. Some questions with them, I mean, especially with Cody Bellinger and these questions about whether he's going to get sent down or not. That's interesting because I wonder how that would work for, you know, a players association argument, something like that, because he did, you know, what he did last year, 40 home runs, I think, something around there, rookie, I feel like it was a National League rookie record. But yeah, for them to get back into contention, they have to do it without Kershaw, who's going to be out for weeks. They have to do it without, or they're doing it right now with Bellinger not being effective. And there's question marks in the starting rotation. So they've made their way back, and that's mostly because the Diamondbacks have fallen so far back. But the Dodgers, we'll see what happens there. But I think that was a question asked to Dave Roberts. Is it getting close to Cody Bellinger getting sent to AAA? He said no. We'll see what happens there. The Chicago Cubs sweep the Mets. They've won 8 out of their last 10. They swept the Mets in 4 on the road. They did it by scoring runs. They did it by pitching well. Usually when you do those two things, you win. The worst was, if you want to put a gambling aspect on it, the Cubs 1-1 in the 14th against the Mets, and then they score 6 runs in the 14th and win 7-1 and the over of 7.5 hits. So that was pretty disgusting there from a gambling angle, but the Cubs are starting to play better. The Atlanta Braves split 4 with the Mets and then take 3 out of 4 against the Nationals. Walk-off wins. Anytime you take 3 out of 4 against the Nationals, because that's big brother in the division right now, even though the Braves are on top. We'll get more into that in our second segment. But the Braves are up there for one of the best weeks in baseball. But I think the clear number one best week in baseball, the Seattle Mariners, because they're in first place. They are in first place in the AL West, 1 game ahead of the Astros. And even if that only lasts for 2 days, being in that position with everything that they've gone through without Robinson Cano, who is suspended for PEDs, that says a lot. I mean, they're winning close games, so some of that is certainly going to be luck-related. But the Mariners in first place, as I heard from a Mariners fan the other day when I reminded him that it was only June, he said, "I don't care, it's been a long time since 2001 when we've had anything, since we've had anything to root for." So Mariners fans, enjoy it, first place. I don't know if you can keep it up, but we're going to talk about that in the next segment coming up, where we talk Mariners, Brewers, Braves, which team has the best chance of winning the division. They're all in first place today on June 4th, so we'll get into them more coming up here in segment 2. So I want to take a look at this poll that I sent out today. Which team in first place today has the best chance of winning its division? The Brewers, the Braves, or the Mariners? I think all three of those are surprise teams. Certainly the Mariners probably the most surprising. Or the Braves. Maybe the Braves are the most surprising, especially with the Nationals in that division. And then the Brewers, surprising because the Cubs are there. The Mariners are a game up at 37-22, a game ahead of Houston. The Braves 35-24, a game and a half up on Washington, 3 games up on Philadelphia. And the Brewers 37-23, 2 games up on the Cubs, 3.5 on St. Louis, and 6.5 on Pittsburgh, who's still hanging in there over 500. So the results of this extremely scientific poll so far, 58 votes at the time of recording, 52% say the Braves. I want to say that that's probably a little bit skewed because I think I have more people that more Braves followers than I do either of these other teams. But 52% Braves, 29% Brewers, 19% Mariners. I would agree that the Mariners are at the bottom. And I say that for a couple of reasons. Their starting pitching is the most unreliable of the three, or it's unreliable in a sense of you have Felix Hernandez, you don't know what you can expect from him all season. You have James Paxton, who is an ace when healthy, but he's never thrown more than 136 innings. Mike Leake is fine. Marco Gonzalez has been pitching well. Wade LeBlanc are those names and resumes that you are going to be able to count on for the whole year. You have Oakland is a good team. You have the Angels, a good team. You have the Astros, obviously a great team, as your competition in the division. That's tough to hold off, and it's even tougher to hold off when I know I say this every time I talk about the Mariners, but they don't have the reinforcements in the minor leagues to improve. And maybe I should stop saying that, because they were able to find a way to get Colome and Denard Span from Tampa Bay. But I think they got a little lucky in the sense of, yeah, they got unlucky that Robinson Cano was suspended for 80 games. Going to miss the postseason, but they essentially used the money that they saved with him to spend to get Span and Colome from a team in Tampa Bay that just wants to save money instead of having good players. And so I don't want to get into that conversation, but they got lucky in a sense there. And so, I mean, if we look at their top prospects, according to MLB.com, Kyle Lewis, number one. I wonder what his trade value is, because he's coming off the ACL tear and it's been a slow recovery back. He is back and playing now. And I don't know that you can trade everybody. You need somebody for down the road, right? So is Kyle Lewis is probably a guy that you want to hang on to, because he's probably not that far away. He was a college bat and was probably ticketed for the majors relatively quickly before that ACL tear. You know, Evan White, Sam Carlson. Sam Carlson was a high school arm just drafted. And so you look at, you know, some of these guys aren't even top 30 prospects in other organizations, and they're in the top 10 for the Mariners. So I don't know what they can do to get better at the trade deadline, and I have questions, probably more questions there about that rotation than these other teams. I mean, they can score, and I've been drinking the Mariners' Kool-Aid for a couple of years, but I'm not. I think they have the worst chance to still be there. Then I want to go to the Brewers. I think the Brewers have the best chance to be there. That might not be a good chance, but when you look at the health questions for Yu Darvish, you don't know what's going to happen there. You know, questions in the rotation for the Cubs if Tyler Chatwood doesn't pan out. John Lester, as the year goes on, I think they're, you know, you can trust Kyle Hendricks. I think for the most part you can trust Jose Quintana. But there are certainly questions there. So if Darvish doesn't turn things around, or the injury is maybe more serious than we are being led to believe, there are questions there. Now, the Cubs have the pieces to go make things happen, but when I look at the Brewers, I also think that they have the pieces as well to improve. I mean, they need help at second base. They need a catcher. They need starting pitching. But they have depth everywhere else. They have depth in the outfield, pieces that they can move. There's first base depth there with Braun playing there. Aguilar, Eric Thames when he comes back. So the bullpen is a lockdown bullpen with Knebel and Josh Hader. You're getting good stuff out of Jeremy Jeffress. So I like them more because I have questions about the Cubs. And I think that's where we go to the Braves, where I just think the Nationals are the better team. I think the Nationals have pieces to get better. I think they have the motivation to get better. And that's where my question comes in for the Braves. Do the Braves have the motivation to make that big move to get over the hump? I look at the Braves. They need a bullpen arm. They need a third baseman, most likely, if you're looking at places to upgrade. Third base, bullpen, you are probably adding a starter, because you look at the starting rotation, and right now you have Brandon McCarthy and Anibal Sanchez. Sanchez hasn't been reliable for years. Brandon McCarthy has pitched well when healthy, but I think, you know, we know that there's the question, is he going to remain healthy? Sean Newcomb, Mike Foldnevitz have pitched well through the first 2 months of the season. Can they hold that level for the rest of the season? And then Julio Teheran, kind of, you know, you don't know. Now, one of the things that they can do is they have Mike Soroka, they have Luis Gohara, who is in the bullpen right now. Those guys can, whether it's put them in the rotation for good, whether it's get them in the mix every once in a while to keep everybody else fresh, they could do that. But are they going to, I mean, they have the pieces to go get anybody that they want, whether it's a Josh Donaldson or a Manny Machado. When a bullpen arm becomes available, they can go get them. But do they want to? Do they want to make that kind of a move this quick? I think I look back to the Cubs in 2015, and off the top of my head, what was their big move? They went out and got Dan Heron, and that's when they were a year ahead of schedule. And so, I don't know. I what do you get from Ozzie Albies in the second half, or Ronald Acuna Jr. in the second half? What do you get from Nick Markakis is off to, like, the best start of his life? So, some questions there. I think the Nationals are just the better team. I think that they have more motivation to make something happen now. And so that's my question with the Braves there. One team we didn't talk about was the Diamondbacks and whether that they could hold on. I think these were the three that fit in well. But going into our final segment here in segment three, I want to look at the Diamondbacks and specifically Paul Goldschmidt and something that I heard as to why he might be struggling as bad as he is. Entering today, June 4th, Paul Goldschmidt is hitting .208 with 8 home runs, 20 RBIs, .325 on base, .721 OPS. And you look at his career numbers. Where's his .208 batting average, .293 is his career mark. .325 on base, .395 is his career mark. .721 OPS career. OPS 919. So, this slump has been going on pretty much all season for Paul Goldschmidt. In April and March, he had .273, .395, so everything was all good then, 4 home runs. But May, he hit .144 with a .252 on base. And some of that, I mean, if you look at, as I look at his splits or try to find his home road splits right now. So at home, he's hitting .160 with 2 home runs on the road, .257 with 6 home runs. So at home with the humidor, how much does that play into his struggles? But .160, and that's in 106 at-bats. At home, when I watch him, and this goes along with the stat that I brought up before that Buster Olney said on Sunday Night Baseball when I believe they were playing the Nationals, how he had said that Paul Goldschmidt didn't have a hit, and this was a couple weeks ago, that Paul Goldschmidt didn't have a hit against a pitch thrown 96 or faster. And he was like 0 for 60-something at the time, and so I don't know if he has one now. I don't know what he's done since then. But that matched up with what I was seeing, and this is coming from just somebody that watches baseball, not a scout or anything other than just watching baseball and seeing what I see. And it just looked like he was half a second off on everything, whether it was half a second off on a fastball or wasn't swinging or there was hesitation on a pitch that he normally swings at or and crushes. And so that's where what I had been observing, where I was like, man, he took that pitch. He looked like he almost wanted to swing, but didn't, just like this indecisiveness. And so when stuff like that happens, I feel like some of that can be mental, because I think that I don't think there's a huge mechanical adjustment there, especially for somebody with the credentials of Paul Goldschmidt, who, you know, has done, a 6-time All-Star. He's been in the MVP top 3 in the MVP 3 different times. So a guy like that, I don't think I don't know if it's at this point mechanical. There might be some little things, but my observation was, okay, he just looks undecided sometimes, or just a little half a second off, a little unsure. And so I started asking around, what's going on? What do you think? And when I talked to somebody who would know, they brought up an interesting point that I hadn't considered. And it was, according to this person, believes that it was contract talks. That contract talks could be having an effect on this slow start. And I asked if that was an opinion or if that was something that's actually happening, and I was told that it's something that's actually happening or was happening. And Paul Goldschmidt never talks about his contract. He gets asked all the time because he's on a super team-friendly deal. 6 years, $32 million with a team option next year. But then after that, he's going to be a free agent in 2020. So he's got the rest of this year, and he's got one more year left. And Mike Hazen in the front office never talk about it publicly. Derek Hall never talks about it. What are they going to do with Paul Goldschmidt? Do you want to sign him? And they always stay very private with that stuff. But if you think about it, from Paul Goldschmidt's perspective, if he just sat back and watched how this offseason played out and saw that first baseman didn't get paid, seeing guys like Mike Moustakas not get paid, seeing older guys not get paid, and the process that went through, and you're sitting there watching that and saying, okay, I'm going to be a free agent at 32. He turns 31 in September, so he'll be 32 in the following year, and so he'll be 32-year-old free agent who plays first base. And if I'm Paul Goldschmidt watching that, I'm saying, I don't know if I'm all that excited as I once was about going into free agency at that age, at my position, when maybe I want to lock something up earlier. And he sees Charlie Blackmon get $100 million plus for locking up early. Again, a little younger, different position, stuff like that. But it makes a lot of sense for him to say, okay, let's see if we can do something before then. It makes sense for the Diamondbacks to do that. If they feel like they can get a discount of some sort or a price that makes sense for them, because there are some people that think they shouldn't give him a big, huge deal at 32 years old playing first base when you're in the market that you are, or when you spend the money that you spent. And you have Zach Greinke's contract, you have AJ Pollock decision coming up. Is that the kind of money that you want to pay to a 32-year-old first baseman? So that could be an issue, and according to somebody that I trust, is an issue or could be playing some sort of role in this slump. And to me, it makes sense because that is a mental thing, and maybe he's starting to think about that a little bit. So I don't know if talks are still ongoing. I don't know how far along they got. Maybe it's a situation where they've agreed to it and they don't want to announce it until he goes on a hot streak. I don't know. That's all just, I don't know the specifics, but that was something that I heard, and I think it makes a lot of sense as to what could be going on with Paul Goldschmidt. So we'll keep an eye on that. We will keep an eye on the three division leaders that we talked about, the Brewers, Mariners, and Braves, and see which one of those can hang on. In tomorrow's episode of Locked On MLB, I want to talk MLB draft. I didn't want to talk about it today because we had some other things to go over, and I don't know anything about the MLB draft right now, and so we're going to learn tonight about who takes who and what you can take away from it, if anything. So we'll talk about that tomorrow and see what happens tonight and come up with a couple more things. But you can you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and LockedOnMLB.com.